see everything melting out there. Isn't that gorgeous? Isn't that just about as good as it gets? And more light every day. It's one of the advantages, eh, of living in the know, is that you celebrate light when it finally arrives. Look, everybody, the sun! Whoa! It's pretty neat. It's a lovely little Theravada and Buddha Rupa, isn't it? That painted one. Thank you. Indeed. So did you do your 10 minutes today?
Not today, not yet. I did started to do it last night, fell asleep.
Well, it's a start. It's a start, isn't it? It's better than a kick in the head. Oh, my water. Oh, fantastic. Thank you. Come in. Maybe you could all move up a little bit on your cushions, and then the chairs can move forward a little bit, so there's a little room for the second row of chairs. Is that okay? This is, I'm moving everybody forward, so there's lots of room for chairs behind. Everybody, you doing okay? You want a chair? Are you okay like that?
I'm okay there.
Good-o.
Chairs are covered?
Yeah.
It's okay.
Grab that cat.
She can move if she wants. Is there a cat in here?
Yeah.
There's a cat.
That's a sneaky cat.
He is. Is he the little one?
They're both sneaky.
He's the heavy guy.
Yeah, he's she is definitely... not a lightweight anymore, is she?
It's like one's made of wood and one's made of...
She's catching up on me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Sadhu. And my favorite night, questions and answers. You ask the questions and Kathy gives the answers. And I mark you all. Is that right? I got that right? I thought I had that right.
They all bring our scorecards to enlightenment. What is this you're holding up? 5.9. 4.2.
The scoring comes after the applause. There's a certain level of applause, and we give you marks. So, how are you doing for questions or answers? Anything you want to run forward?
Maybe talk a little bit about the working the tarot and the yoga, the Tibetan symbolism together, because they're different, but they, you know, you were talking yesterday a bit about the themes that are common,
They're all dealing with the same principles. Any teaching is always dealing with the same principles, because it's humans all over the world trying to work with the same principles. The principles are basically consciousness and matter, right? Mind-body, and how to work them together, right? Isn't that what it is to be alive for anybody, a mosquito, any being?
Never really thought of mosquitoes having minds, but
So that whole play between nama and rupa in Buddhist terms, or spirit and matter in Western terms, is from all of the minds that have considered that and tried to come to some understanding of how emotions work in that, how meaning works in that, because meaning is certainly involves both material and mind, doesn't it? The meanings you give to things. You want to think about that a bit, or does that make sense to you? So like the whole point of figuring out your motive for life, your meaning, what your meaning is, whether you tend toward negativity or positivity, that has a lot to do with how you see how mind and matter are bonded together and how they work, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Meaning is basically the glue, isn't it, for our life? It glues us to the next moment, doesn't it? My word, I doubt you'll find that written in any other any text anywhere. But to me, it's like meaning is a glue in some way. Mm-hmm. And it glues you to particular patterns of behavior. So in both Eastern and Western teaching, you find some principles that are very much the same. For example, in using the Western term God, God in not in popular opinions, but in the language of the deepest thinkers, the people who most clearly followed a path of prayer for greater understanding, God is beyond definition. Because if it was possible to define, it would be within the realm of un-God. Right? So, and in the Eastern traditions, in the Hindu tradition, they also talk about a state that is a state of knowing that is beyond subject-object duality. It's in the Hindu tradition, it's in the Buddhist tradition, and so forth. Sometimes it's called Atma in the Hindu with a capital A, to refer to a oneness state that is, I hate using the word universal because it seems so limited to me. Does it work for you, or do you mind if I say something like multiversal? Does that give you a sense? Like, because I think the universe is very much conditioned by our pictures from Hubble telescope, and you know, it kind of already is something we can see. Whereas when you're talking about a totality, an experience beyond subject object, you can't have the idea of an object in there anyway, so you have to say mystery. Or God. Right? So that principle is in all religions, and then or all faith traditions. I shouldn't say all faith traditions, because certainly atheists are a faith tradition too. They just believe in disbelief. So that's quite valid, you know, because it's impossible to be a human being without faith. But your faith can be in the negative, your faith can be in the positive. That makes sense? So one of the statements made in both Eastern and Western traditions is that it is possible to have the experience of a reality that transcends subject-object. Subject-object experience is impermanent. It is possible to have an experience that moves beyond the impermanent. In Christianity, you call it heaven. And in the old teachings of Christianity, there were levels of what they would have called purgatories, which were not nasty places. They were like in Buddhism they call the lesser heaven realms, places that after this existence one could go to ripen a little bit more to get it to the point of beyond subject object. Those purgatories you only find mentioned now occasionally in like spiritual songs. Some of you know that those songs like Rock My Soul in the Bosom of Abraham, you know that song? Mm-hmm. The Bosom of Abraham was one of those heavens. Mm-hmm. It was actually the name of one. From when were they that knocked out? Somewhere around the 5th century or something like that in our time? From the Western, particularly the Christian Western tradition. In Judaism, they didn't particularly talk so much about those heavens, but they believed that the energy of, when a grandparent died, the next grandchild of the same sex would be given their name. And you would know more than me, there isn't a lot of talk about other realms in between, is there really? But there is certainly the suggestion of some carrying on and never a waste. And the whole job of being a practitioner in the Judaic tradition was to honor the mystery by trying to complete it in your life here. Does that make sense? Do you understand? Is that pretty clear? Is that what you remember? Yeah. And so the whole quality of like in Judaism, the traditional practices and the celebration of ritual were actually done in the homes. In Christianity, that got flipped over. You have to go to church. And in fact, because you know how I get on one of these trips, and then, you know, I bore you and you're polite. I don't expect you to be too polite about this. Somewhere around anywhere from the 8th to the 12th century, people were starting, because you met the Druids and you met the, you know, those other ones. And so that then it was made illegal to not go to church. So that you wouldn't stay home and practice something else. And you would actually be fined or in prison. You would be warned the first time, fined the second time, and put in prison. If you didn't go to church the third time. If I'm maybe screwing up the facts. That might not be the order it happened, but from what I'm remembering badly at the moment. It's been a long time since I studied the history of religions in the West, but so, you know, there is this kind of sense about the need to find some appropriate way to use meaning or faith. And it's in both traditions, East and West. That's what all that was about. You follow that? What happens is that when it becomes a necessity for one group of people who feel they have the right answer to make a law about the faith because they're afraid that they're going to get knocked out by the wrong answer, then it gets a little skewed, and it's no longer your faith. It should be something that you discover by your own practice in your homes, and that's your appointed task from the point of view of mystery. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
When fear enters, faith is no longer operative. It's not faith anymore. It's like battles. So in things like the tarot, which is basically a record of the old teachings from predating the formation of the Christian church, when there was the Crusades and the, you know, witch burning and the plague was running through, so there was a lot of fear, and so people were trying to clean up their act because God was punishing them and blah 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 blah, you know. Then the things like the tarot were those teachings were suppressed, so then they were put into a deck of cards. And that's where our modern cards come from.
Mm-hmm.
One of the court cards is taken out. There's a four court cards in the tarot. And they were still practiced, but they were practiced in hidden groups. So they began to be called esoteric, right?
Mm-hmm.
In, for example, Tibet, you have these different schools. In order for a school, like four main schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Bon, if you count that, five. In order for a school to survive, it depended on the generosity of the people around. The people around would be generous to somebody who they thought had powerful prayers that would make the crops grow well.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a certain amount of need for power struggle amongst the schools. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Very straightforward, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, when fear comes in, faith gets tweaked, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You can see that. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You can see that as soon as, you know, there is some sense of fear in a country, then the faith becomes very, very shaped to demonize the enemy and, you know, have reason, you know, do the propaganda thing to have reason. So whenever you see that fear happening, whenever you see a faith where someone cannot hear more than one teaching, a fear where someone cannot because they're afraid they're going to be made corrupt, you know that there is a corruption of faith there. The real teaching of faith is to be able to, when something is of value to you, be interested in, take it deeper, see what it does, if it works, bring your faith up a little more, plant your faith in it because it worked that way. You want to see the next step. The minute it doesn't work, you check to see whether you've done it other than you should. You check it out from every way. So faith is in both Eastern and Western traditions that actually use faith well. Faith is always accompanied by intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And to see for yourself, not to believe before you know. Not to believe before you know. Believe you have the right to check for yourself. That's faith. So faith is quite a different energy than we often hear about it when we're just sort of browsing the religions of our time. And Wayne gave me a really good book to read the other day. And it basically, I'm sure that's what she gets to at some point in the book. Yeah, because I haven't read, I just started. I think I have it with me, actually. And any of you who are interested in exploring more things about faith, I really recommend this. This is really an excellent book. Through a Glass Darkly, her name is Mary Jo Meadow. Really, really interesting. It's really worthwhile having a look at it. It will help you keep your sense of faith on track. Because you know how easy, especially because in a lot of ways that we are isolated in our society, you know, because we're so busy and we use the telephone and, you know, we don't make meals together. You know, understand what I'm saying? It doesn't feel isolated. It feels normal to us. But we don't get the opportunity of living back to back with... Do you want a chair? I think you should have one. Are your legs okay? Or you want to lean against that wall, maybe? I'm just concerned. I don't want you to get crippled just listening to me. All right. Oh, yeah, and you guys, some of you can treat you anyway. Yeah, I'll mind my own business. So that whole thing of, like, actually working in daily ways, like washing clothes together with people who have a slightly different take on life, we don't do that, do we? So we don't get that chance of hearing a slightly thing. We get presented with what you should buy. This is the best product. What you should eat. This is the best food, you know? This comes at you, doesn't it? It's all prepackaged and you're just moving. So that actually for us to have healthy faith, I think is really hard work. So therefore, once you're established to some degree in a practice of one tradition, I personally have found it very useful to go and look at another tradition and try to see, is there anything similar here that actually is useful? Now, you know what a minority I am in this. You know that if any of you, you know, every time I go to a teaching by a Tibetan teacher, or a Theravadan teacher, all of the students at some time who are anywhere within a 10-foot radius of me will come and say, oh, and who's your teacher? Why are they saying that? Why are they asking? To see whether I belong there. Am I from another school? Who's your teacher? And because in the West it's really like a disease that there's got to be a right way. And any other way, therefore, is not right. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So you notice how I keep pushing you guys into something different every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Or getting you to check something else. Because I think it's very healthy to develop a real faith that works with your intelligence. Just because your gut has told you something since you were 5 years old doesn't mean it's true. It could mean you were well conditioned and maybe it's time to get off that block of cement and try another one. Is that possible? Mm-hmm. Is that slightly possible? What have you got to lose? Fixed view. Geez, that'd be terrible, wouldn't it? Have an open mind. Oh my God, then who would I vote for? You know? Do you understand? So that's the short answer, is that? Is that okay?
That's okay, that's good, thank you.
Nice question, thank you. Anybody else? It's provocative, isn't it, the idea of faith? How can you believe what you don't know? The Buddha said either you're going to believe it out of fear or out of love for someone else. Because they believe it, you're going to believe it. If you don't see for yourself, the only reason you're going to believe something is because you're afraid or because you want to be like someone else. Interesting, eh? Now many of us are always operate with a little level of fear just below us, and like we really want something that makes us feel like we're doing the right thing. If we got the rules and we can follow them, then we feel like we're right, so therefore we get... Isn't that what happened during the Second World War in Germany? I mean, I wasn't there, but, you know, my dad's family was there. So I heard things, you know, about how hard it was to actually speak up when it was sort of neutral to do so. And how things, you know, just... How if you just don't quite have the time, and we don't have the time, do we? So many things we don't have the time for. Is it true? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, going out of your way to try to get everybody else to sign your favorite, you know, if I get one more form letter, there's somebody saying, if I will send this on to 11 people, Mother Mary will bless me. And I'm one of somebody else's 11 favorite people, or, you know? Is it?
No, down around the Dalai Lama's eight sons that are around.
There's a lot of them. Join this, sign this petition. And, you know, if somebody comes and phones me and talks to me about what they're thinking about, I would be more likely to pay attention. But when somebody sends me something about you should see this or sign this petition, I just delete it. I want someone to talk to me personally about why they believe it so I can hear them. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think we should lose our brains. I don't think we should just follow the gut reaction here or there. It's too easy to trigger that. That's what I used to do, you know, when I was convinced that life was full of crap and I was a lost cause. Of course, none of you here believe you're a lost cause, of course. But that was my personal way of being totally conceited about myself, was being so sure that there was no hope for me, and I was a total... I was the one completely, completely septic wart on the ass of the universe. That was who I was, and I knew it.
I was just going to say, there's a sign over by Castle Downs Transit Center that says, Moses was a basket case, too.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Excellent. Yeah, and that's really good. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And like, you know, taking my intellect into bars and you know, after I panhandled for enough to buy a beer and walking around, you know, listening to different people until I saw three or four people really talking about something, and I'd sit just within earshot. And I would listen, you know, sip my beer and listen until I figured out who was the best arguer and what they were arguing, and then I would carefully listen to them, and then I would pose the opposite view in my mind, and then I would inveigle myself into their conversation, and I would argue them back to the other side, and when they got there, then I would argue them back. I would change sides, you know? Why was I doing that? Just to prove what total asses people were. And I could always find the proof. As long as I believed that, I could find the proof. But to be challenged to step outside of my comfort zone, oh, oh, oh. Oh, no. We will always find the proof for our views, won't we?
Mm-hmm.
Always. But to have the intelligence and the faith to question them. The only people that do that are people who really are warriors, who really do want to care for the world. The only people who do that care for themselves. And then from that self who is cared for, can care for the world. It's not possible otherwise, is it? Not in my experience. Because all I did was make myself feel even more righteous about my negative view.
Congratulations, once again, you've proved that intellects are assholes, and that means you. Oh, congratulations, aren't you happy?
Yeah. The people who send me all those emails about, you know, sign this and save the environment here and that, like, you know, how much computer time is saving the environment there? My first immediately, do you know how much electronic garbage there is being dumped in the world? So I don't believe it, you see. Now, if they phoned me, I would be more likely. If they came over, you know, we had coffee together, I'd really believe it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't call that faith, I call that fear, when that's what's happening. Protecting your own view. And looking for evidence. Mm. And I call it that, and I'm pretty good at sensing it because I have such an ace at it myself, you see. And being willing to put that one down was a big step for me. Being willing to stop doing that, to stop being a loser, was a big step for me. To being willing to see, okay, what do I have? What can I do? It's not easy to make that step, but it's a heaven of a lot easier than not making that step.
Is it a conscious decision, or do you just find yourself in a new, like when these sort of transitions happen?
It's conscious in a way, because there is a part of one's being that is conscious that there is of our choices. But it might not be something that gets through the program that's running. You know, there's something in your being that does, in anyone's being, that does know that.
Yeah, because I find like decisions and any major decisions or whatever, it comes to me. It's not like I can just at will kind of get the insight.
And the other thing about all the faith traditions that is shared is that it's said that if you want something to happen, you practice pretending it's already happened,
mm-hmm.
no matter how many times it fails. Because imitation starts making the brain move in a different way and a new pattern gets formed so the thought can come through easier.
Mm-hmm.
That's what ritual is about. That's what arising yoga is about, isn't it? Doesn't that seem logical to you? I'll take that as a
yes. I don't know a lot about the term arising yoga.
Chen Reizi? Is that...
Mm-hmm.
Chen Reizi is an arising yoga practice.
Mm-hmm.
Would that make sense then?
Yeah.
You're practicing seeing yourself in a different light. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you let it dissolve. And then... the next moment, it comes up again, but in a slightly different way, as you. The qualities of Chen Reizi as me. and the practice of that, and the practice of that, and the practice of that, is how you use faith. You say, okay, I want to see if this works, mm-hmm. and then you try it. And you do it enough times, and it works. That's what ritual is in all the different traditions, whatever ritual. And every religion or every path has their own form of ritual, don't they? And very often we exclude each other for ritual reasons, don't we?
By excluding each other for ritual.
Well, how do Catholics say the Lord's Prayer? Do they do it right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. But they do it different from the United Church.
Yeah.
Sure.
So which one's right?
Yeah.
How can you tell?
Yeah. But you do know by how they say the prayer which church you're in.
Yeah.
For sure.
And do some people think they're in the right church?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like that. You mean you don't spend a month trying to figure out a question?
Can you talk a bit more about the Eye of Wisdom?
The one on the American dollar?
Yeah.
That's the Eye of Wisdom.
Okay.
It's the same one that's on the Emperor card in the tarot.
Okay. Sort of from the point of view of... Sorry.
Have you ever heard of clarity?
Yes.
Same thing. In tarot, as you know, if you've gone to the classes, the symbol for the emperor is window. Wind door, the window. Window is something that you can look out of, right? But you're really doing well if you can look into it at the same time, too, right? But the window itself is just the window, isn't it? The essence of the window is just windowish, clarity. So the Eye of Wisdom is when there is the clarity of being able to see who is speaking as well as what they are speaking to. That is to say, it's just the window. That's what the symbol is on the American dollar on top of the pyramid. Neat, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And it's from mystery schools.
Some of the fathers of confederation, or we call the guys that put the United States together, the fathers of confederation, that's Canadian.
Constitution, would that be?
Fathers of confederation. I mean, I think a number of them were
there were Masons and
mystery schools,
all those things. Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Very much so. And so you find a lot of that symbolism in when you look at the early American.
So what are the supporting circumstances?
For clarity? Here they are. This is it.
Is that clear?
Is this clear? Are they clear? There is clarity. It's the awareness of the clarity that matters. Look without, look without, look without. Look within, look within. Look without, look without. Look within, look within. Look. The window. It's always there. The mind. The clarity. Consciousness. Clarity. Not the objects. The quality of clarity. Everything is a window. It's very thin. It's very fragile. It's huge. You can never get through it. It's not. It's yours. It's not. Oh, when you put that cat out, clarity left the room. You got it? Clarity. You know clarity and emptiness? To have the clarity and the knowledge of the flow of everything is in flow, is impermanent, is moving. And then bring those two together. Brings one into the non-dual state that in the West is often called God. So how to complete the work. Isn't that the point in Judaism, to complete the work here? Mm-hmm. Not, it's by practicing kindness with what is present, isn't it? That's to say, quit trying for something different out there. Or in here.
Emptiness, no fix.
Everything is moving. There's no fixed identity. I don't know. You think I'm going to say more? You must be nuts. Oh, you are not. Ha, the window, ha. I think also there are a lot of things I didn't talk about. Then ha, doesn't that mean the? I think it means the. I think the actual translation of the word ha is the article. But... like a point that doesn't exist. Clarity. Kinda. Oh, I love it. I love it. So whenever you see that Masonic eye on the pyramid, it's the eye of wisdom. And in the way the symbol of that in esoteric ritual is the left eye. And you remember His Holiness the Karmapa. I don't know how many of you have met either of the two that have been around. When he did the hat ceremony, right? The right eye is looking out and the left eye is looking in. Do you remember that? That's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. It's like completing clarity and emptiness. Mm-hmm. And that's what the hat does. Mm-hmm. And he's manifesting the enlightenment. And if you see it, that guarantees, you know, the prophecy is, if you see the full experience of the energy when he holds the black hat and the horns are blowing and everything, that is a prophecy of your awakening. So it's the same symbols, you see? Just a different way of presenting them. Am I boring you, or is this interesting, or
yes.
Do you have any questions? I think I have to go over, run before questioning. Come on, Wayne, don't put your fingers in front of your mouth and mumble.
Okay, what is fundamentalism then?
What is?
Fundamentalism? Yeah.
Could you be a little more specific about what idea is sponsoring that question so I can understand?
Well, I suppose in the West we hear a lot about fundamentalism and versus that book where you question yourself and what's faith and the experience and the other faith in that, mm-hmm. versus the other side where it's I believe it because I believe it, or because somebody told me to believe it, or, mm-hmm. or this says this right here, so
According to Buddhist tradition, there are three reasons to be involved in any endeavor. One is fear, one is they call faith, which I don't think is a very good use of that word. I think it should be belief or opinion. Fear, belief, or opinion, and compassion. And the first level, in which I mentioned already slightly with talking about the Buddha saying that, you know, sometimes people believe because of the fear of not believing. For example, if you beat a child long enough, they'll start to believe that this is the right way to do things, you know. Isn't that true?
Yes.
Or whatever, right? If you criticize a child, they'll believe that they can never, that that's right, that whatever they do should be criticized, right? And so forth, right? So for many people, the reason why they join something is because everybody in their neighborhood is joining it, and they don't want to be ostracized. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And that's such a reasonable, or that, you know, that there is, if they do it, they'll get some reward. I had a dear friend who came from the Maritimes and actually lived with me for a while. And she's a very dear friend. And she was telling me about how it wasn't that easy to get a good job in the Maritimes. And she and her husband would get a really good job, and they'd save every penny, and they wouldn't eat very well, save all their money, and then they'd go to Hawaii for 3 weeks and pig out and just, and then they come back and save money like that to pay off the debt for what the money they spent, and then, you know. And it's kind of like that, like you have to suffer before you can, you know, you have to, you're lesser, but you could be saved if you, it's sort of a masochistic thing, you know, if you just believe and you just keep plodding, you'll get a reward. So that's like the fear of not getting a reward, or the fear of not getting out of whatever it is you don't like. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
And that has a lot to do with all of us a lot of the time, doesn't it? Don't we often do things with fear as our motive?
Mm-hmm.
And we get caught by that, don't we? How much do you worry? What's worry?
Fear.
Big fear. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What about if you imagine whatever you're worried about, what if you imagined it being excellent the way it is and only getting better? Would that make you more likely to see options of seeing it get better? It's your brain. You know? That's arising yoga, isn't it? Like seeing something and then having the confidence to try it. Because does the worry help? If you're worried about whether or not you're going to remember to tell the postman that you're going to be away next week, you know, and you're worried and you got to tell the postman and you got to tell the postman. And the door opens, you hear somebody at the door, and you open the door and say, look, I'm going to be away next week. And it's not the door is not the postman, it's somebody else, and you don't even notice it's not them, and you close the door again because you got milk boiling on the stove, like, you know, and then you find out you didn't tell them. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're so intent on your own process, you don't, the fear of it stops you from seeing whether it's actually present. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you miss the little opportunities to find some other path that's probably more fun anyway. And if there are no other paths, at least you're not doubling your suffering. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you actually know that you worry or you know that you stew over something. It's your brain. Write yourself a note. Dear, I give you permission to not worry about for minutes every day. You know? Yours truly. Put it in your mailbox. Read it to yourself when you get it. You know? So I'm thinking to myself, how old do I have to be before I have permission to stop being such an idiot about some things that I do, you know? Maybe I should write, and I've done that. I've written myself a note. At least it brought the idea into my brain a little clearer. And it did help, you know? I mean, why not be nice to yourself? Give yourself a promissory note. I promise I'll at least think about it. So that's the first one, fear. It's like, you know, and then the next one, faith, is that because you're hoping for something before you practice it. So I think that's more like opinion or belief rather than my understanding of the word faith. It's like you're hoping for something, an outer object. You're hoping that this will get you what it seems to be getting other people. You're hoping this is the right path for you, or, you know, you're hoping it will work for you. And that's way better. It's easier on you. Right? And then it becomes, eventually, when you learn, no, that didn't work so well, but then you have the faith to look at it and say, I did learn this, and I know now that, like when you take a step on a path, the whole landscape changes, doesn't it? Every step you take, you see slightly differently, don't you? You take one step, you're going around a corner, the next step you're further around the corner, you can see more possibilities, can't you? If you stand there thinking, oh, it's never going to change, it's never going to change. You've got to move your feet. So when you start moving on the path, then the next step you know, oh, there's a puddle on the path here. Geez, I haven't taken my shoes and socks off and wiggled my feet in mud for a long time. Hope there's no crocodiles there. I'll stick a stick in first. No, there isn't. Okay, I'll do that. Or I don't feel like doing that. I'm going to, you know, but then you know from your own experience. And when you actually know from your own experience, from faith, you know, moving faith from belief to actual testing it and learning from your own experience. That's when I call it faith, when you've actually tested it. Because it's not faith in what you're trying to get. It's faith in your right to try. We would call it confidence. But to me, faith is the confidence that you have the right to try. And there is a point in hoping, because you're worth it. That's confidence to me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So then the final step is compassion. Once you know something works and you can see it for yourself, your mind has more space in it. You have a more spacious thing. And you realize that there's probably all kinds of opportunities, not only for you, but for all people. And you feel more spacious about all the problems in the world. You don't let them... And your heart is open to people. We can hear people suffering and it doesn't tire you. Because you know, if you're just with them, they'll talk it through, they'll either get bored or their pain will cause them to take the next step and move on themselves. Right? So those in Buddhism are the three motives for belief. So some people are doing fear. I think that's what you're referring to when you talk about fundamentalism. It's a path. It has often been my path. I hope it's not now. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I fall into it on occasion. Because I'm human. I haven't hit the big E yet. You only look a couple of flashes, but not the big one where you stay there.
Does the body undergo chemical and physiological changes when we are in fear?
Oh yeah. Like, you can feel that, can't you?
Yeah.
You can even feel your skin tighten, can't you?
Yeah. But it seems to revert back. But I'm wondering, are those changes permanent?
No, nothing about the body is actually permanent.
Or
even its seeming permanence isn't permanent.
Maybe permanent's not the right word.
The normal isn't even permanent.
But change, so
well,
that they don't.
I mean, life, a lifetime is short, you know. And if you establish, if you have a bunch of water flowing down a mountain and it establishes a riverbed over a long period of time, it takes some repeated change in the flow of the water for that riverbed to move, doesn't it? So if you repeatedly change the direction of the water, it will create a new riverbed. And the body is more like a riverbed that if you continuously, habitually perform one way of flowing with fear or hatred or delusion or pride or jealousy, you know, or greed, that there will be a tendency to take longer to get a new riverbed going. And maybe you'll be dead before it happens. But the energy for that will continue from a Buddhist point of view, and the next rebirth linking karma for that energy will have less of a established riverbed in that old pattern. Mm-hmm. From a Buddhist point of view, everybody's awakened whether they want to or not. You got no choice.
Destructive emotions. You've heard of that? This book I found really interesting with regards to what she's talking about, the physical energy and the scientific studies that they've done.
And anger is the worst.
Yeah.
Anger, it is in that book too. I haven't read the book, but anger is the worst. Anger will do more damage more quickly. And next, I think, is fear, in my experience. But that does not mean that it's not reversible.
No, it's
which is really nice to know, isn't it?
Yeah. And in the book, you can do functional MRIs on people meditating and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
And watch the changes in the brain.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
In the meditative state.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've really discovered through the research with meditators that actually the brain changes.
It does.
Before that, they had no idea in Western science.
Yeah.
Now there is actually an accepted theory or an accepted belief, which is neat, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't remember how long if you haven't read the book, I don't know how long it took, but it was written and the science was done in conjunction with the Dalai Lama really pushing the Western to use the functional MRIs and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
To look at emotions and what it's doing on the brain. It's really fascinating.
I'll have to read it for sure. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry?
Oh, it was just a minor point. I think they'd also discovered that the brain changes with, like in psychotherapy when they got, or cognitive therapy or something, when they got somebody to change an obsessive pattern, I think they
changes the brain.
Yeah,
exactly. Which is a rising yoga, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's exactly the same. But if you don't change your mind, you can't change your mind.
Yeah.
I mean, like, duh. It's a no-brainer, isn't it? You wait for the world to change your mind, it ain't gonna. Because it doesn't have the switch. We've got the switch ourselves. Anger is usually a reaction to not getting what you think you should get, or you know, a surprise, or they're slightly different. They have the same kind of focus power, but fear is more spread out, and anger is like, you know, they have the same sharpness of focus, but fear spreads out more, and anger is like right there.
Anger is not the expression of fear.
I would not say that, although some people might say that. I know that I have had experiences that put me right on the edge of awe and fear, you know, in various, certainly drugs, but also in various meditation experiences, where the consciousness is just at a point beyond where there's any way of describing the experience within my previous understandings, and it's just like a border between awe and fear. Fear is quite a different thing, but anger is like very sharp, very pointed, and fear isn't necessarily. Fear is more widespread. And anger is usually because you expect something and it doesn't happen, or because there's something you don't like and you decide to attack it. Anger in the Buddhist terminology is frustrated desire. Frustrated desire. You just want everybody to leave you alone and somebody comes up with one more question. Or you just want everybody to ask questions and nobody will ask you a question. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You get the picture. And anger, if you're depressed, you can use anger as a way to at least feel you've got some life, but you don't realize how dangerous that is usually. You know, people don't tend to, you know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you? People don't tend to realize how dangerous that is, because then you're going to be fluctuating between the two, and you're never going to learn how to bring interest into depression. Because the depression will just feel so heavy that you'll automatically go to anger when it's too painful. And you won't actually turn around and try to say, okay, well, you know, you won't use any of the techniques that bring interest into anger, into depression.
No reasoning at that point.
No reasoning at all. In either one of those states.
Okay, so I've got a question for you, and it kind of goes back to all of that. In psychology, we've learned that depression is fear turned inwards,
mm-hmm.
or anger turned inwards, is what depression is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I can see why that would be
sense of clarity.
I can see why that would be be appropriate in Buddhism. Depression is actually a conceit, so it's self grasping, but self grasping with negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And in Buddhism, there are three kinds of conceit. I am better than, I am worse than, and I am equal to. Where it's hard for the being to feel themselves as part of the world because they're always aware of themselves as part of the world. That's called conceit in Buddhism. Where there is such a magnified sense of your own being, you don't see it in relation to. So I am worse than is grasping after a worse self, always finding ways to be worse, which I was talking about when I said that, you know, I would go into bars. You know, and that took a lot of, I mean, I couldn't just do that out of nowhere. I had to really gear up for it. I mean, it Well, there was a real kind of like self-awareness of myself, you know, like, oh yeah, that person, yeah, I can get it, you know? I mean, some people might not have seen that as depression, but it was, and it was like using like a kind of an anger, but I wanted to prove that everybody else also wasn't worth it and that I wasn't worth it, so it sort of went to the two conceits, conceit of equality and conceit of inferiority. Does that make sense to you?
Is there a positive component to fear, and is that maybe what interest is, or is fear only a negative?
I don't think fear is that particularly negative. It's when it focuses on an object. It's like I don't think anger is that negative. It's only when it gets fixated. I don't think that any of those emotions are negative. It's how you use them. They're just energy. They're winds. And if you learn how to identify them and use them, depression, conceit, any of them, if you learn how to use them, they are like going to lift you and you're going to fly. But if you keep being focused back on isolation, you don't feel a space around you, how can you fly? I really am absolutely convinced at this point in my life, and I have been for some years now, that all of the emotions are valuable. How do you want to use them? You cannot be without any of the emotional states you have and come to satisfaction. You need them all, but how you're using them, and then you heard me talk about this probably a few billion times, you know, if you take a really nice bread knife and you have a loaf of bread there and you're going to cut a piece of bread and you grab it by the blade and try to cut it with the handle, what will happen? your hand will get sore. And a bread won't cut. But if you turn the sucker around, same knife. That, to me, is the truth of emotions. If you actually pay attention and you use them as they are, use them for their qualities, not for your unconscious reaction, not for your knee-jerk reaction, but use them for their qualities. If you use your intelligence and say, okay, what's the value of this, you know? And look at, what's the value of anger?
Focus.
Amen. And clarity, eh? And energy. So what's the problem with anger? Really too tight a focus and the ability to remember every wrong going back 5,000 lifetimes. Just exactly. And furthermore, when you were 3 seconds old, your mother told me that right? Okay, so like how to bring that ability to connect dots and that focus, but not make it like, you know, so pointed. Open it up and see the possibilities. What does that become? Intelligence. Anger is intelligence. You know, instead of using it to get out of depression, why not use that intelligence to see what else is possible? Okay, you need some training to do it. That's, you know, like, yeah. You had to get trained to be depressed, so, you know, but you should believe in training. I know I'm making it way too Mickey Mouse in my description, but there is a real truth in what I'm saying. I know I'm giving sort of a like little, you know, cookie cutter view. But there is a real truth in what I'm saying. And it's our choice. It's our choice. And this life is precious. And you notice how fast it goes. How old are you going to be?
60.
God, that's scary. 60. That means I'm getting really old. Any other? Have I done okay on the questions so far? Okay. Yes.
The thing I'm talking about the winds, the thing that's really apparent to me when I'm at the university, because if you're in a bad mood, you can't take the it out on the students. It really comes back on you really quickly.
I bet.
It's an interesting environment for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you had said about they'll come up regardless. Like, you could be a multi-gazillionaire or a peasant on the street. You're still going to have times in the day where you feel good, where you feel bad, where you feel neutral, where you feel angry. And not necessarily for any cause that you can really point your finger at.
That's right.
I'm just really pissed off right now.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had days where it went on for days. Like you said, when, how are you? Well, I really, really lousy. Thank you very much. Well, I'm reminded of that fairly often.
Yeah.
You just kind of ride it. Sometimes when you're not, when I'm aware.
When you're aware, you can watch yourself being depressed or in a bad mood and be also aware of outside of yourself.
Yeah.
But the minute you feel depressed or in a bad mood and you immediately identify with that, glove, glove, glove. This is very straightforward. You decide you're angry, you're angry. You decide you're grateful, you're grateful. Flip a bloody coin, folks. It's your life. It's true. I know I'm making it sound easier than some people would appreciate. And in a way I am, but in a way it's true, but it's something you do minute by minute. And when it doesn't work, you don't decide to fall into helplessness. You congratulate yourself on having tried. And think to yourself, I wonder what little neurons I changed in my brain with that. Instant gratification is not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about training oneself. Ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Ritual is how to use the emotions, basically. How to use your aspirations, how to use your meanings. So that's why, for me, it's very important to understand the ritual behind, like, the seven offering bowls, or because I think that helps people appreciate them, the ritual, and actually use them every day to actually remind themselves. You know, it's like housekeeping. Why do you do housekeeping? Because it feels good to be in a clean house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can't do it all, but maybe you can take one corner. And okay, that corner I'm going to keep clean for a week. And for a week you look at that corner and you say, damn, that makes me feel good. And you start putting a flower in it. And pretty soon, you know, you want a flower over there. So like 2 feet outside of the corner starts getting clean. Right? But you don't say, I've got to clean the house, and then you clean it, and then you say, you know, somebody walks in with their feet, you say, oh, what's the use? You don't do that. You do as much as you are able, and you congratulate yourself on your ableness. You got to be a good parent to yourself, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So you had lousy parents. Mm-hmm. Did I tell you that I had this terrible shock about my parents? I told you, didn't I? Did I mention that? They weren't fully awakened beings. They weren't awakened beings. They were like ordinary neurotic people. Oh, God, I was so sensitive. It was horrible. Something. I wanted them to be awakened. And I only found out slowly that they were. They were hiding it. They were lying. What can I tell you? It was so stubborn. Oh, yours too? Oh my God. We need to form a support group. Son of a gun, eh? Mm-hmm. Who knew? Meanwhile, and the worst of it all was that they both had sense of humor. How you doing? More questions? Answers?
Well, the first thing maybe dawned in terms of being good and being bad, you get those days where, you know, generally it's a good mood, or the next day it's, you know, you feel kind of grumpy all day, and you can't put it sort of, you know?
Yeah.
But the feeling sometimes will start when you get up. You know, like, so you have today, maybe, okay, I'm taking a good day, I'll go to sleep, I'll wake up, and there's a sense of it, you know?
Yeah, okay.
And so where... So what is that when you wake up and go, okay, go ahead.
Okay. There is a really nice little exercise that you can do, because when you go to sleep, it tends to set the mood for when you wake up. Okay. Did you know that?
No.
So that if you're going to sleep, as you're going to sleep, don't think of the things you didn't get done or what you're worried about. Think either of something beautiful you saw that day, someone you're happy to know, that you thought about that day if you didn't see them. Some sense of smell, color, taste, touch that you enjoyed that day. And keep bringing your mind back to that and any other related ones that you can find, and think, how lovely that I had that today. I wonder what I will have tomorrow. And then your mind will wander a little bit. Then you bring it back again and you go through the same thing again. And you do that as many times as you can before you fall asleep. If you wake up in the middle of the night to go pee, as you're stumbling to the bathroom, recall again the beautiful thing that you were thinking of. And think, I wonder what I'll see tomorrow. Finish peeing, flush the toilet, I hope put the toilet seat down in case I get up after you. And I wonder. That seems to have hit a few nerves.
You certainly in most traps up. I should be glad wherever the seat's doing.
Well, yeah. And then when you wake up in the morning, as you're waking up, let yourself remember sort of again, because, you know, say, oh, wait a minute, when I went to sleep last night, what was I thinking? As soon as you're able. And, oh, I wonder what will happen today. You do that for 3 days, I think you'll find it changes. It has for quite a few people that I've given that exercise to. It's worked for me. So I'm always looking for someone that it doesn't work for, so I get more inventive.
Yeah,
let me know.
I'll work on
let
that.
Me know.
Okay. Then what is it then that creates that feeling of, you know, you have that good day, the next day you wake up. Is it just that the unconscious mind just brings up stuff at random and then you're just stuck with it?
Yeah, basically, maybe just before you fell asleep you thought of something that you didn't like, or, you know, like there's this continuum mind,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
And there are all these different seeds of karma ripening and moving through.
No, I'm saying, like, sometimes you wake up, there's a sort of a general kind of theme of the day, you don't feel, you come in low energy, or just, sort of that Monday feeling, right? You know, Monday.
So, yeah.
Go
ahead.
I always find when I have those days, I can choose to change it.
Mm-hmm.
I can choose to stay in that state, or I can choose to change it and go, well, you know, I'm going to have a good day, and picture myself having that good day, and my whole mood and outlook will change. So I'm not, I don't feel stuck in it. No.
So, like, and even if you do want to stay in it, I mean, you can
choose to.
You can stay in the day, but you don't have to believe it's you.
No, I recognize that, but there's sort of a little underlying.
But other than that, try that exercise. Okay. Yeah. Other than that, try that exercise, because I think it was very interesting to me when I started paying attention many years ago to when I was in Thailand, to my Buddhist teachers there, who talked about how you go to sleep is how you wake up. And that there was, it's very useful to do loving kindness as you're going to sleep, going over all the people you saw that day, and wishing them to be well and happy. And you can either work from the first one you saw to the last, or the last to the first. And it's a really nice way also, because you usually fall asleep about a quarter of the way through your recollection of the people you saw that day. So it's like, but from that, then I started exploring it different ways, I found it's very useful. People who tend to have nightmares or insomnia, it also works very well for them often. So, but is there a CAT trying to dig through the floor? Trying to claw through the hardwood and make a hole big enough to get in. At least they've stopped the meowing. Is that okay then?
Yeah. And just further on, I'm beginning my day, I also find that the first thing in the morning, my mind is, you know, like throughout the day, there's a certain amount of focus, but first you get up in the morning, especially after taking the bus, I find my mind kind of just running around looking for stuff to hold on to, you know, to rest, and then it changes. The ones you're doing, I find the mind running around in the morning.
Yeah.
And then just because of the mind start.
Yeah.
Versus later on the day, it's not running around.
Yeah, and I work the opposite.
Yeah.
For me, in the morning, my mind is fairly quiet for me, and at night, it's like running through everything. But people tend to be more one than the other usually. So in the morning, it's nice for you to, take a focus of your senses. See which sense you're using the most, and what would happen if you started hearing instead of seeing on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
So your eyes are more active. So just as an exploration of awareness, what would happen if you tried to be more, let the light come into your eyes rather than looking out? You remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Where you imagine, instead of you looking at me now, you imagine that actually your right eye is receiving light. Can you do that right now? That you can feel the light coming into your eye rather than you looking out at me here. Good. And then the left eye, the same. So that you imagine that the light is actually coming into your eyes. You're not so actively looking out. You're more. And then pay attention to sound. And just think, you know, what sounds, what tone? You like music, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, what scale would that person be? Would that be an F flat voice, or, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And start trying to hear the sounds as like a Messiaen concert or something like that, you know. And so that you actually are using that active mind, but you're using it by moving your senses around. And it's very interesting that it's impossible to think and hear at the same time.
Mm.
Well, but try it. Tell me if I'm right. I'd like to know what you think, what you hear, and whether you can do it at the same time. Some people don't quite believe me on that one, but they come close. Does that give you playground there? Okay. Hearing is very powerful. People who work with music know that. So, how are we doing? I've got time. What's your question?
I had a question and I can't remember. I was very frustrated. I was going to ask you about it. It's called analysis. But I'm sure I'll come
What
up.
Happens to questions? Where do they go?
I wasn't
able to question here all at the same time. I'm listening.
It was earlier in the week, and I'm like, I'm going to ask Cecily about that. I'm going to press her.
There you go. And gone it is.
Just in the background. Never come forward again.
You're such a wonderful community. I appreciate you. It's so incredibly important for me to have such good friends who practice and care. And like I say, you keep me honest. And I really appreciate that. So you notice there's this beautiful gold light in your heart. Spreads through your body. Through your eyebrows. It comes out of your eyebrows. From the little hair. Back of your head. Out your shoulders. Down your arms. Down your legs. Of course, nobody like Ruth or anybody has their eyes closed because they don't know if they do, I'll bite them. You know, closing their eyes on. And spreads right through this room, this light. In the house, in the neighborhood. Anybody you're thinking of, you just imagine them washed by the light. Right through the whole world, right into space. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, just temporarily washed, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. So thank you for your great compassion.
Cecily, before we leave, could we speak a bit about Andrea's present circumstances?
Oh yeah, Jeff
has a report.
Do you mind if I get a glass of water? I'm just really thirsty.
Do you want this one?
It's nice and cold and delicious.
Sure.